Great Joe Jones Caravan. It came out in 1964. Jonathan David Samuel of Joe Jones, the jazz drummer, was born on this day in Chicago. One of Hank Basie's great players. So we play his music on this day in history. We are now joined by State Senator Jamie Raskin, Maryland State Senator for the 20th District in Montgomery County, Professor of Law and Director of Law and Government Programming at Washington College of Law at American University, and John Nichols, Washington correspondent for The Nation, co-author of Dollarocracy, How the Money and Media Election Complex is Destroying America. John and Jamie, welcome. Good to have you both with us.
Delighted to be with you, Mark.
Great to be with you, Mark, and with Jamie.
410-319-8888 is the number here. Write to us at talk@steinershow.org. Log on to our Facebook pages. Tweet me at Mark Steiner, 410-319-8888. Jamie Raskin wrote this piece in the Washington Post, a really interesting editorial. At first, I thought it was kind of a humorous tongue-in-cheek, but it's serious at the same time, about shareholders being able to influence corporations since they are now people and can use their might to twist the vote. But Jamie, let me let you open. Talk a bit about what you wrote.
Well, as you know, Mark, the Senate voted 54-42 to reverse Citizens United with a constitutional amendment, which was a majority, but not the two-thirds majority you need to amend the Constitution. There are upwards of 70% of the American people who think that Citizens United was a badly flawed decision and people want to turn it around. But it's obviously going to be a long haul with a constitutional amendment, which takes a two-thirds vote in both houses of Congress and three-quarters of the states. Something needs to be done right away because democracy is being drained away because of the inundation of corporate money. I think that the solution lies actually within the decision. Justice Kennedy's decision is premised on the idea that corporations have the right to spend money in politics to promote political candidates or to attack political candidates because they're just a group of citizens. And that's not the way that the court ever viewed it before, but that is the basis of the decision. It's just what he calls an association that has taken on a corporate form. In answer to the dissenting justices, it was a 5-4 decision, he says that, well, if there's any problem with it, the shareholders will be able to correct the situation through the procedures of corporate democracy. And then he predicts that all political spending will be thoroughly disclosed online. He says, quote, with the advent of the Internet, prompt disclosure of expenditures can provide shareholders and citizens with the information needed to hold corporations and elected officials accountable for their positions and supporters. The problem is that that's not remotely the law. The shareholders don't even know what political expenditures and contributions the corporations are engaged in, much less have any real-world control over it. But if we're going to move into this brave new world where billions of dollars of corporate money are swimming in our politics, then the shareholders really do have to have an effective check on it. So my proposal is a simple one. Corporations in Maryland have got to disclose within 48 hours any political expenditures that they engage in. Two, they can't engage in any political expenditures unless they certify that they have the assent of a majority of the shareholders who have been able to express their partisan political preferences. Three, if a majority of the shares are owned by large institutional investors like state and local pension funds, insurance companies, universities, foundations, then the company cannot engage in any political expenditures because those entities are forbidden to engage in political expenditures. And finally, if the company does do political spending outside of these rules, then corporate shareholders will have a right to a rebate of a proportionate amount of their investment that was spent on the political activity without their consent, which is precisely the right that union members have right now if they disagree with a political expenditure that a union does. So in other words, I think that we have got to take seriously what the Supreme Court has done. I mean, so much of the country thinks it's ridiculous to treat for-profit business corporations like groups of citizens, but the Supreme Court has done it, and so now we've got to take it seriously and give shareholders the right to control this money.
And I think that in a broader sense here, John Nichols, this is really, I think we don't often get a deep sense of how critical what we're facing is. There were two things that happened, one that came out in The Nation, one that Jamie Raskin wrote about. One was, in Jamie's article, there was a piece about this technological error that caused the this secret memo to come out from the Republican Governor's Public Policy Committee, which is a secretive group of 501c4 that can collect money and not say where the money comes from. And it disclosed all the corporations from Coca-Cola, ExxonMobil, Microsoft, Pfizer, United Health Group, Walmart, who chipped in $250,000 or more at the statesman level in this Republican governor's campaign coffers. And then in The Nation, they talked about this audio that was found when these large corporate donors, these wealthy people came together and brought leading Republican politicians in to kind of strategize together. So there's a lot going on here that most Americans are not even aware of.
Well, I actually would disagree slightly with you, and you know how painful that is for me. I think Americans are fully aware. I think Americans completely understand that their political process has been fully corrupted by money. Polling shows overwhelmingly that the American people believe there's too much money in politics, that it defines our policy. There was a poll a while back, and Jamie may remember the precise numbers better than I, but it showed, they asked people, do you think your senator would sell you out for a campaign contribution? And a stunning number of Americans said yes. And so the fact of the matter is, I think Americans are completely conscious of the crisis, and I don't think much surprises them anymore as regards corporate money and big money flowing into our politics. In our book a couple of years ago, Bob McChesney and I detailed that, you know, close to $12 billion, and again, I emphasize $12 billion was spent on all the races of 2012, and we're proportionally on target to have another record-blowing campaign. This warps all of our policy. There's no question of that. It warps both of our political parties. It warps even the best of our politicians, with the exception of Jamie Raskin. And so we end up in a situation where most people are really conscious of the crisis. What they don't see is a way out, and that's the problem. There is no question that many, many powerful people see corporations as not just human beings, but that they actually see, and I was in a debate recently with the head of the American Legislative Exchange Council, conservative policy group.
Yeah.
And you know, I mentioned that corporations are incredibly dominant in writing the legislation, and she said, yeah, and they have constituents, they're shareholders. And you know, seeing the structures of corporations as something akin to and parallel to our democracy. So what Jamie is proposing here is genius, right? This is precisely the right response. It's not the only response. And let me emphasize, we need to amend the Constitution. A very profound way to say that money is not speech, corporations are not people, and citizens have a right to organize elections where the vote matters more than the dollar. But in the immediate moment where we have this crisis, what Jamie is proposing is applying the same rules to corporations that we apply to unions. And the Supreme Court has been very, very active in this area. They have erected a lot of new barriers in the Knox decision and others to unions engaging even in politics that affects the future of the union, literally the life and death of the union, and requiring them to survey and get assent from their members. Jamie is proposing a similar requirement on corporations. Now, most corporations aren't used to having to live by a set of standards like this. And I think if Maryland does this, and if it spreads to other states, especially a couple of big states, places like California and New York, which are possible, they are states that lean toward reform on some of these issues, at least on paper, I think we could see a significant impact on money in politics. Not a cure for what ails it, because individual billionaire donors will still be run around spending immense amounts of money, sometimes dark money, sometimes publicly. But I think Jamie's proposal is an incredibly exciting one. It fits very well within the current discourse about money and politics. And, you know, my only hope is that Jamie can get it passed quick, because we need immediate intervention.
So this is, Jamie, this is going to be introduced in this coming legislative session. And just to say it, break it down again, this is no corporation can contribute money to campaigns without the knowledge and acquiescence as well of their shareholders?
The majority support. On the theory that if the corporation is made up of the people who own it, the share owners, then they are the ones who have to express themselves. So in the event that you mentioned, Mark, or maybe John brought it up, which was this event that just completely by freakish accident came to public view because there was a technical snafu. This was just one event where something called the Republican Governor's Public Policy Council was meeting, and there were dozens and dozens of corporations there, Aetna, Coca-Cola, ExxonMobil, Microsoft, Motorola, Pfizer, and so on. They'd given $250,000. Now, understand, that's just for one event. That's not all that they've given over the course of the year or the election cycle. So we're talking about millions and millions of dollars. But my point is that if you've got a retirement fund and you know, if you're a baby boomer, at least you were lucky enough to be working at a time when a lot of people had retirement funds. So if you are, you know, a teacher or a state or local government employee, or you've got a 401k, it's overwhelmingly likely that your money, a little piece of your retirement, went into this event at the Omni La Costa Resort and Spa, rated the number one health spa, wellness spa in America, with a golf course and everything, for these corporations to get together to kick in money for the Republican governor's campaigns. And understand that that's just one example. The same thing goes on for, you know, the Republican and Democratic Senate campaign committees and the House and the Republican and Democratic House committees and the state legislative committees and so on. You know, and I got to imagine that Republicans are as mad as I feel that my retirement funds are going into Republican candidates and Republican campaigns. So if this is taking place, the shareholders have got to know about it. And, you know, we're getting to a point where we've got to make a decision whether the people are going to govern the corporations or the corporations are going to govern the people. That is the test that we're facing with all of this corporate money that's flowing into our politics.
So, I can sense a huge battle taking place in the state legislature around this issue. I mean, this is not going to be an easy thing to pass, given the power of money in Annapolis and the power of lobbyists themselves.
I think that's right. You know, but John said something that was interesting, which is that, you know, we are facing a profound moment in the history of corporate capitalism. You know, and there's an article that's been written by a judge on the Delaware Chancery Court, who's the chief judge there, Judge Leo Strine, talking about the way in which Citizens United creates a crisis for the corporation, because the conservative corporate model has been that, you know, over the last several decades, that all the corporation is interested in is profit, and the shareholders are passive entities, and the corporation just goes out and maximizes profit as much as possible. And he says Citizens United now transforms the corporation into a quasi-political entity where the shareholders are going to have to wake up, because people are not going to want their money, their retirement funds, being spent in this way. Now, it turns out that 70% of the shares in America's Fortune 500 companies are owned by pension funds and insurance companies and universities and foundations and other large institutional investors, which are forbidden by law or by contract to engage in political campaign spending. And so the law would simply say, if most of your stock is owned by entities that have to be politically neutral, then you, the corporation, have to be politically neutral too, because whose views are you representing at that point?
We have to take a very brief break. We'll come right back with this conversation. You've just heard Jamie Raskin, state senator, introducing legislation that would force disclosure of force corporations to not be able to give money to campaigns unless a majority of the people who are shareholders agree with that. Playing on the Supreme Court ruling, we're going to come back and talk a bit about Supreme Court with him and John Nichols, of course, the Washington correspondent for The Nation. Stay with us. We'll be right back. 410-319-8888. Join us.
He said, you even thinking about time? Well, before you do anything rash.
Love is but a song we sing. Fears we will die.
You can make the mountains. Coming back here with the Youngbloods, Get Together. Certified gold on this day in 1969 as part of our day in history. And we went to break with the main ingredient. Everybody plays the fool. Today, we celebrate the birthday of main ingredient founding member, Panama-born Tony Sylvester, born on this day in 1941. And we are here talking about Citizens United, voting rights in America, with Senator Jamie Raskin, Maryland State Senator for the 20th District in Montgomery County, professor of law and director of the Law and Government Program at the Washington College of Law at American University, who wrote this piece in the Washington Post that got the show started today, and John Nichols, Washington correspondent for The Nation, co-author of Dollarocracy, How Money and the Media Election Complex is Destroying America. Call us with your comments at 410-319-8888. Email your thoughts to talk@steinershow.org. Tweet us at Mark Steiner. Comment on the Mark Steiner Show Facebook page, 410-319-8888. But one of the things that really struck me, John, I was reading some of the pieces you've written recently, and on what the Supreme Court just did with limiting voting rights once again in Ohio for early voting. And the Supreme Court has consistently kind of laid down laws restricting voting and voting rights, but they did the voting rights bill. It seems to me that one of the things that the reason the amendment is so important about the constitutional amendment to change the nature of law in America is because the Supreme Court plays a very reactionary role. And I would argue that has played a reactionary role in most of the history of America, except for a period of some 50 years between the 30s and the 70s. But it's a very kind of tough nut to crack. So, I mean, I think that's part of what we're facing in America.
I think you're exactly right. And I think that one of the great dangers for progressives and, frankly, for people who aren't politically on the left or even maybe politically engaged all that much is the assumption that the court will see us through, that somehow the top court in the land, our highest court, will, at the end of the day, sort things out in a reasonable way. Now, we just saw yesterday some evidence that is encouraging in that regard, with the Supreme Court deciding to stand down and not take some marriage equality cases. And so some people will say, well, see, there's some good news. But the bad news, the really bad news, is that in recent decades, not the last couple of years, recent decades, the United States Supreme Court has been increasingly clear on its activist intentions, and I do use that word activist very consciously. Its activist intention is to make it harder to vote, make democracy a more elite and constrained activity, not one where people are necessarily prevented from voting in most cases, but certainly made to leap through a lot of hoops, while at the same time making it dramatically easier to flood money into politics. And so we're creating a circumstance where the court's intent appears again and again to be to prioritize the dollar, making of the dollar, the using of the dollar in our political process as a tool to achieve ends, over the vote. Now, that's antithetical to how any fourth grader is taught American democracy. It's antithetical to what the American people want. And yet, that's clearly what is coming from our courts. And the problem with that, and I think Jamie would share this view, the problem with that is that when those court decisions come down, one after another, steadily moving in the direction of weakening voting rights while at the same time strengthening money, they create a very rapid political reality. a new political reality that is hard to undo. That reinforces, you know, the court as we understand it, and new judges coming on, you know, fitting into that reality, unfortunately. And it is one of those points where, in their genius, the founders, who recognize their own flaws and their own weaknesses, suggested that the people and their elected representatives ought to step up and amend. Amending the Constitution is nothing radical. This is something that's been done, you know, more than two dozen times. It's been done, it was done 10 times by the founders in the first 4 years of the American experiment after the writing of the Constitution. It was done a few years later after the Secretary of the Treasury was shot by the Vice President, and they decided they needed a new way to pay the Vice President.
Right.
I mean, we've amended the Constitution a lot, and we've usually amended it, you know, overwhelmingly to make our democracy and our governing more functional. So we should be very comfortable with the idea that our court has gone astray and that we, the people, need to intervene as the founders intended. This is pure constitutional stuff. Unfortunately, as I've said again and again, it's not covered as such in most of the media. Most of our media still tends to view amending the Constitution in two ways. One, as radical, as somehow, you know, an overwhelming move, and two, as impossible. And the second one concerns me the most, because it's my sense that when we tell people they don't have the ability to repair or to alter circumstances with which they strongly disagree, we begin to shut down the American political process. We make it permanently dysfunctional. And so I think the amendment is really critical. I love what Jamie's doing. I love his, and I don't mean this in a diminishing way, his incremental response to the crisis. But I do think we should fully understand that we're going to need to do that amendment. It is not, it's not an option. It is a necessity.
And, Jamie, just to talk a minute here before we have to take a break, that I was thinking about what John was just saying and how you look at the role of the battles within states like ours, where we are broadcasting from, where you and I both live.
Yeah.
To take this on. I mean, we cannot force a constitutional amendment, but, I mean, this is, and in a sense it is incremental, but it's a battle that has to be waged on many fronts if we're going to confront kind of this monster stealing our democracy.
Well, that's right. We've amended the Constitution 17 times since the Bill of Rights, and if you subtract prohibition and the repeal of it, most of our constitutional amendments have been about expanding the suffrage and improving the democratic process. And so this is very much consistent with women's suffrage and direct election of U.S. senators and allowing people in D.C. to participate in presidential elections and so on. You know, constitutional amendments take a long time, but they become an umbrella for lots of political reforms along the way. And so, you know, I testified for the constitutional amendment, and I've been fighting for you know, formal support from the Maryland General Assembly for the constitutional amendment. And so we absolutely need to keep moving the ball forward on that, as John says. But in the meantime, all of these corporations are out spending money, along with the explicitly right-wing corporations like Koch Brothers, but the corporations that everybody's pension funds are wrapped up in are spending money too. And so it's a question not just of electoral and political democracy, but of corporate democracy. If corporations are going to be turned into political actors and we're going to demolish the wall of separation between corporate treasury wealth and public elections, then the shareholders need to assert themselves, and the state legislatures are the ones that govern corporations. And so we have a responsibility to say that, you know, within our corporate law, corporations cannot get involved in the political process unless they are actually speaking for a majority of the shareholders who have taken, you know, an explicit and defined stance on elections.
So we are going to link to this piece. I encourage everybody to read it at steinershow.org, A Shareholder Solution to Citizens United by State Senator Jamie Raskin, and the bill he plans to introduce. We're also going to be linking to the latest three articles by John Nichols in The Nation magazine on these very issues as well. So you can read them as we continue our coverage of how to take our democracy back and how to secure it. I want to thank once again State Senator Jamie Raskin for joining us. Jamie, always great to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Totally my pleasure.
And always a pleasure to have our good friend John Nichols in the air with us. John, thank you so much.
great discussion, Mark and Jamie. I'm delighted to be a part of it.
Take care, y'all. We're going to take a very brief break. And when we come back, Love the Poet is in the house. So don't go away. We're taking a break with Stardust, Artie Shaw and his orchestra, recorded on this day in 1940. Enjoy Stardust. We'll be back with a little Stardust ourselves when Love the Poet joins us in studio. Stay with us.